What's going on, everyone, and good morning. Today is Wednesday, October 30th, and this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And today, we, media, fans, and yes, the team, we turn the page to the Jacksonville Jaguars coming off of, again, just got to repeat it, a super impressive win this past Sunday. But will they follow it up with a win this Sunday against Jacksonville? Early leak here. Yeah, I think they're going to. I think they're going to beat the Jaguars. But as Nick and Jalen say, you know, one way to do that is to make sure they have a good week of practice. And practice does begin today as the Eagles, the full team, will be out on the field later today for practice. So let's get into what we always do on the Daily Pod. I got the schedule for you, who we'll be looking out for from an injury perspective. And then Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore talked on Tuesday, and I thought they had a few interesting things to say that I'm excited to share with you guys. And then finally, after the commercial, stick around, because me, Ike Reese, and Spike Eskin had a discussion about if the Eagles are back, if they're Super Bowl contenders, and I thought the things they had to say probably honestly represent a lot of how the fans feel. I think Ike made some good points on why they are, and Spike, like, I don't blame him. Like, the emotional hedge there where this team hasn't been great for a while, I understand how he feels. So good discussion, I thought, between the three of us that I wanted to share with you guys. So that'll be on the other side of the commercial. But first, let's start how we do every day. What should you be on the lookout for today? The schedule for the Eagles. So at 12:10, Nick Sirianni will hold his press conference. Again, not a ton of pressing questions for Nick. Like, he's survived, the everything that happened after the Cleveland Browns, and now it's kind of back to, like, football questions. At 12:10, that is when Nick will be speaking, and we will hear what he has to say. Obviously, the press conference will be carried on WIP, so make sure you tune in for that. Use the Odyssey app to do that, or you can check out my Twitter where I will be tweeting any interesting or important things that he has to say. So 12:10, Nick Sirianni. 3:05, practice begins. That'll be an opportunity to see who is out there, who is not. Obviously, the big name to keep an eye on is Darius Slay, who we'll talk about in a second. And so at 3:05, we'll have more on that. And then at 4:45, the locker room opens, Jalen Hurts will speak. And we'll talk, hear from Jalen. And funny thing, according to John Clark of NBC Sports Philly, Jalen Hurts spent some time golfing with Barack Obama recently, him, Saquon Barkley, and Jeffrey Lurie. So quite the power foursome there of people, I guess. But really cool. So I'm excited to hear what Jalen has to say about that, what Saquon has to say about that. Guessing Jeffrey's not going to talk about that. So 4:45, keep an eye out for tweets from the locker room and tweets from Jalen Hurts' press conference. All right. Also, the injury report, as I said, keep an eye out today for an update on Darius Slay. I would kind of be surprised if he was out at practice practicing. If he is, obviously that's a tremendous sign. I will say that while I think Darius Slay is a very important part of this team, and he definitely is going to be needed if they're going to get as far as now as I think some of us believe they can get, I don't know if they super need him this week. Like, the Jaguars are going to be without Christian Kirk. They're going to be without Brian Robinson, whose name I feel like I'm messing up there. But the stud receiver out of LSU is not going to be playing. So you can get by this week, or should be able to get by this week, with Quinn Yan, Isaiah Rodgers, and then obviously Cooper DeJean in the nickel. So yes, you want to see Darius Slay out there. You hope that he's healthy. But if he has to take an extra week to get ready for Dallas the following week, I don't think that's the end of the world. But we will see what the status is with Darius Slay. So on Tuesday, the coordinator spoke to the media, and I thought both Fangio and Kellen Moore talked about a few interesting things. So let's get right into it. I asked Vic Fangio about this team's tackling. One thing that's really stood out to me over these past few weeks, since they've kind of turned this thing around, is the tackling has been way better. Now, part of that is they're not playing teams that are as good, right? Like, when you're playing teams with better players, they're harder to tackle. But the answer that Vic gave, I thought, was a super interesting one, and it was an angle I hadn't considered. So here's what Vic Fangio had to say about why the team is tackling better.
Just better overall play by the whole defense. You know, we had in some of those earlier games, running backs getting through the second, third level too easily, and those are hard tackles. You know, I just think we've played better overall.
I think it's a great point. It's not something I had considered, that with the defensive line playing better, less running backs aren't getting through as much. And the linebackers, the safeties, who are really what the majority of missed tackles are, like, very rarely, like, defensive linemen miss tackles, yes, but mostly it's the linebackers and the defensive backs that are there to tackle. That they're just not being presented with as tough of opportunities. The defensive line is being better against the run. More people are there. It's not more one-on-one things in space. But even with that, and that's a credit to the defensive line for making it happen, their missed tackle numbers are really down. So in the first four games of the season, they missed 33 tackles. It's about eight a game, I believe, off the top of my head, or when I did it, and if I remember correctly. They were missing about eight tackles a game. In the last three games, they've missed 11 total tackles. So they missed three times as many tackles in the first four games as they have in the last three games. And look, credit to the coaching staff. I know Vic is not going to say it, but when you're out at practice, or when, you know, like when I'm out at practice, I should say, wish you guys could be there with me. You can see they're repping it differently. They're teaching it differently. They have, they're essentially tackling like the coaches now. Like a coach will stand there with a shield. I don't know. I can't think of what I would call it. Like they stand there with something, and the players hit them essentially and tackle them onto the ground, onto like a big mat. So they've definitely changed how they do tackling. And I don't think that's the main reason. I do think Vic Fangio is correct that the defensive line playing better is a big part of it. But I just, the tackling numbers are way better. When you go up against teams, now the Jaguars are not one of them, that have great players, like you have to be a great tackling team. Look at this past week, Cooper DeJean, really big tackle on the goal line. Cooper DeJean, really big tackle on Jamar Chase, fourth and one. Brandon Graham, really big tackle on third and one against the run. So just simply tackling better has really, really helped this defense. Next up, Vic Fangio talked about defensive backs coach Christian Parker, who has been outstanding this year. We talk so much about how good Quinyon looks, how good Cooper looks. And, you know, when it comes to offensive linemen, we often give Jeff Stoutland a ton of credit, and rightfully so. Jeff Stoutland deserves a ton of credit for what he does with those offensive linemen. But all positions have position coaches. And Christian Parker, the results on the field this year have been really impressive. So here's what Vic Fangio had to say about Christian Parker.
Very important. You know, I think he does a good job with them. You know, does a good job in the meeting, spends an individual time with them in his office, which helps with a lot of guys. You know, he's doing an excellent job with them for sure.
I think it is not going to be long before Christian Parker is a defensive coordinator in this league. The good thing the Eagles have going for him is he's young, so maybe it would take a little bit, but man, that guy is impressive. The times we've talked to him, he's super impressive. The players really like him. You can see that the results are there. Like, at the end of the day, that he has Quinyon and Cooper DeJean playing at an outstanding level for rookies. They have high football IQ, but part of that is how they're being taught. And Vic isn't the first person to bring up that Christian Parker meets with a lot of his players one-on-one. Nick Sirianni has talked about that. What a good job Christian Parker does meeting with the players, having that one-on-one time, building a relationship with them, really kind of focusing in with each player on what their role is, what they can work on. So look, Jeff Stoutland's an outstanding offensive line coach. I'm not saying Christian Parker is in that level yet, but he deserves a ton of credit for what the secondary has been this year. Reed's playing awesome. Chauncey's been better as the season has gone on. So major hat tip to Christian Parker. The Eagles have a really, really, really good young coach on their staff, and it'll be interesting to see. Honestly, with Vic Fangio kind of up there, it wouldn't shock me if Christian Parker is the Eagles' next defensive coordinator. I'm actually going to tweet that. A little behind the scenes, inside baseball there. Finally, Vic Fangio was asked about the trade deadline, and in typical Fangio fashion, he was asked, you know, if he's advocating to make any trades or whatever, and he just said no, so I'm not going to play the audio for you of that. But he was then asked later by our good friend Jimmy Kempsky of Philly Voice, what positions are easiest to trade for and kind of, you know, get going with the defense. And here's what he had to say.
Vic, with the trade deadline coming up, is there any position that you're advocating for, want to see a move at?
No.
So you feel good about the kind of state of the roster defensively then?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to improve your team drastically this time of year. I mean, I think if you look at some of those trades over the years, they really haven't had the effect that some teams were hoping for. Unless it's a trade that, you know, where you're getting a guy that you're going to have for a few years, you know, where it's more of a bigger trade than swapping guys, you know, trading a sixth for a seventh, those type things.
Yeah, I don't think the Eagles are going to be trading for any starting level player, obviously, in the secondary. They're not going to bench any of their secondary guys. They're all playing outstanding right now. And they're obviously not going to bench, I don't think at least, any of the linebackers. Like, N'Kobe is playing decent. I think from a chemistry perspective, keeping those linebackers in there, they're the ones relaying the play. They're the ones setting the defense. I don't think you'll see any changes there. He did mention, like, defensive line. I know it was kind of casually, but it is definitely the easiest position, in my opinion, to go out there and put a player from a trade in. Now, obviously, the Eagles haven't had success with that. Robert Quinn wasn't really able to get on the field. Jannard Avery wasn't able to get on the field. But I think with the experience of Vic Fangio, if they were to trade for an edge, he is someone that they should count on to be able to go out and play at the level of which he was playing prior to being acquired. Like, I don't think if they go out and acquire a guy next week at the trade deadline, he doesn't get 4 or 5 games to acclimate himself. Like, you trade for someone in season because you want an instant impact from him. And I do think that defensive line is still a position they'll target. I think defensive tackle is definitely a position they could target. Jordan Davis is playing less and less. Mora Ajamo and Milt Williams have both been really good, but I don't think they're of a status yet where they're, you know, immune to losing snaps. You look at the edges, maybe they could take a few snaps from Brandon Graham, help him stay healthier later in the season. Perhaps you take a little more running snaps from Bryce Huff, but I think edge is definitely a position they could go after as well. So defensive line, I think, is a top position that is most likely to be traded for. Potentially backup tight end, just because with Goddard dealing with a hamstring injury, after Calcaterra, you do get pretty thin there pretty quick. So maybe they go out and trade for a tight end. But I think on the defensive side of the ball, defensive line is definitely the most likely to go out and to be acquired at the deadline. And I'm sure Howie's working his phones to make that happen. All right, Kellen Moore was asked about Fred Johnson's play against Cincinnati. And honestly, I don't think it's something we talked about enough. Here's what Kellen Moore had to say about Fred Johnson.
Certainly going into the game, we were very aware of, you know, we couldn't let him get going. At the end of the day, though, there are moments and opportunities where Fred's one-on-one, and he did a tremendous job. Big time football, some play action plays where he's truly one-on-one with him. And, you know, you just can't say enough good things about what.
So I went and I looked it up, and Fred Johnson allowed one hurry versus Cincinnati in 24 pass blocking reps. That's outstanding. Keep in mind, prior to this game, he allowed 22 hurries in 99 pass rushing snaps. So he essentially went from one every 5 snaps to one every 24 snaps against Cincinnati. And he was going up against Trey Hendrickson. Like, they put Trey Hendrickson on him. And numbers aside, just rewatching the game, it was night and day from how Fred Johnson played the previous 2 games to this game. When I would rewatch Jalen against Cleveland in New York, it was very apparent Fred Johnson was impacting Jalen. Like, he was impacting the pocket. I think Jalen was aware that there could be pressure coming from that side. You look at the Cincinnati game, and I thought Jalen looked much more comfortable in the pocket as the game went on, and that's because Fred Johnson was winning. It felt like against Cleveland and New York, I would watch the tape, and 4, 5, 6, 7 times, I'd look and think, oh, that's a bad Fred Johnson rep. Against Cincinnati, I didn't see that at all. So I think Fred Johnson having a really good game against Trey Hendrickson is very encouraging. Obviously, Jacksonville, also a good defensive line, so that'll be some tough work for Fred Johnson. But look, you know, the tough thing about being a backup, and players will tell you this, and I think it should just be common sense, is just being thrown in, even if it's just as a starter. Like, even if you find out on Monday you're starting on Sunday, it is hard to jump in there and play well right away. The luxury the starters get, and the luxury they've earned, is they get to build momentum week after week. They get to see reps of them playing and work on those things. They get to get more comfortable out there. Fred Johnson, the first 2 weeks, really struggled. He did. He really struggled. And he struggled against Tampa Bay. But as this goes on, and look, he's not going to win the job over Jordan Mailata, but the more Fred Johnson plays and the better he plays, obviously that's an outstanding thing for this team, because as much as we know Jordan Mailata is working really hard, and obviously I think he will play again this year, it's a big hamstring. He's healing there. So it could take some time for him to get back, and seeing Fred Johnson play really well is a big deal for this team. It really is, especially going up against, you know, a few weeks here with teams that have good defensive lines. Finally, Kellen Moore was asked about the opening drives of Cincinnati. They scored on the first drive of the game in the first in the first quarter. Obviously, the score was in the second quarter, but they scored on the first drive of the game in the first half, which is essentially the same thing as scoring in the first quarter. And then they scored the first drive of the second half as well. And I think they scored on 7 out of 8 drives, if I'm not mistaken. So Kellen Moore was asked about it, and here's what he had to say.
He had a long drive, like the 7-minute, 37-minute drive, and in the fourth quarter, what's it like from a play caller's perspective? What does that feel like? Left leg start clicking, what have you? What was it like?
That was a big time drive for our guys. I think it was awesome. It was really cool because it was kind of that 4-minute, you know, everyone kind of calls it 4-minute ball, but it wasn't just run. It was, you know, we'd sneak in some passes here and there when we got into certain situations. I thought our guys just did an excellent job. It was really, really crisp. Obviously, we ate a lot of time off the clock, finished it the right way with a touchdown. I thought there was really big time football in there. There's third down conversions. You know, it was just a really clean, big time opportunity for our guys.
So obviously, you know, giving the players and coaching staff credit is nothing new. I will say, the more we talk to Kellen Moore, he's not exactly super interesting at the podium. Like, he can definitely have head coach vibes where he's not saying anything. Very different from Nick Sirianni, in my opinion. But this offense is starting to click. The first quarter thing, they have to... So really, they have to get better at it because they can't fall behind consistently in these games. If they're consistently falling behind 10-3 or 14-3 or 10-0 or even 7-0, like, that's a hard way to win games. So my concern isn't so much that they have to jump out to a lead. It's mostly, like, they can go 0-0 in the first quarter, and then their offense has proven as the game goes on and they get more to see more and more what the opposing defense is doing, they'll figure it out. My concern is just if you play a Detroit in the championship game, or you go to Dallas and, you know, that place is always crazy. Like, if you fall behind 10-0, that's just really, really hard to come back from. It's just not a sustainable way to win. So when we talk about the first quarter offense, I think you have to lump the defense in there too, where the real issue with this team is they are risking falling behind every single week. So I'll be curious to see this upcoming week against Jacksonville, if they can finally get that score in the first quarter. Joe Giglio, obviously a sports radio, 94 WIP, has an interesting stat where if you look at the three teams that didn't score 6 weeks into the season in the first quarter, it's like two trash teams and the Lions team that didn't win a game all year. Now, I think the Eagles are better than that, obviously, but that's pretty damning. Like, the class of teams they're in are not great. So, yeah, they have to keep working on scoring earlier in games. And it was encouraging. It was certainly encouraging to see them do that against Cincinnati. All right. On the other side, as I said, I was on 94 WIP with Spike Eskin and Ike Reese and Jack Fritz. Jack was in there. Jack, an excellent part of that show. As we know, don't tell him I said that. But we talked about if the Eagles are Super Bowl contenders, if they're back, what the worries are. And I thought both of them made some really interesting points I wanted to share with you guys. So on the other side, we'll play that for you. Then that'll be it. So I do have to say, he's Elliot, I'm James. We'll talk to you later. And by later, I mean on the other side of the commercial. So first, a word from our sponsors.
It's a WIP afternoon show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It's slightly after 3 o'clock. You can thank OG Wade for that. But it's 3 o'clock on Tuesday, which means it is Tuesdays with Elliot, brought to you by Groundworks. Tackle your wet basement, drywall cracks, or the nasty smells coming from your crawl space by booking a free inspection at groundworks.com. Elliot, we heard you had a little bit of an adventure returning back from Cincinnati, so we welcome you back
to the
Delaware
Valley. Thank you. And I got to say, Cincinnati was nice. I got to give it to you, Ike. That's a top five football city.
Come on, Jack.
Top five. Never been
to the city.
What'd you like about it?
Dude, the football scene around there was unbelievable.
top five football
city? Yeah, I think it's top five.
Okay,
yep.
So
yeah.
Philly.
Kansas City. Kansas City, Pittsburgh.
Green Bay. Okay, so that's and then Detroit?
So I took Green Bay out just because I would never, ever want to live there. Like, I would rather live in Detroit or Cincinnati than Green Bay.
Well, that's, you said football.
Not many people have ever
said that,
especially white
people. Well, but I'm saying part of being a great football city is also like picturing yourself living there.
You'd rather live in Detroit? Yeah, I guarantee you not many people have said that.
Yeah.
The city is turning, man.
I've heard some good things about Detroit, actually.
Look, we'll be there for the championship game, so I'm excited to see it.
Are you sure they won't be here? The way
they might be.
So, Elliot, let me ask you this. The top thing we talked about was, you know, Ike said that he believes they turned the corner, they found the formula, all of these things, once again, Super Bowl contenders. Are you there with this Eagles team yet?
I am. I'm definitely there. I think for me, it's because it isn't a 1 week thing. Like, I think it's been three straight weeks of them improving. And I've said this isn't just like a overreaction now. I thought they played better against Cleveland than everybody wanted to admit because everyone was so mad at Nick. And then I thought against the Giants, they played better than they did against the Browns. And then I thought against the Bengals, they played better than they did against the Giants. So I've seen three straight weeks of improvement. And also, obviously, coming from the guy that tracked every throw in training camp, like Jalen taking care of the ball is 1, 2, and 3 for me. Like, that's it. If Jalen's taking care of the ball, I am in on the team. And I think Jalen has been way smarter with the football over the last 3 weeks. He's gone four straight games without an interception. He had a fumble against Tampa, which is bad, but four straight games without an interception. That's the most he's ever done in his career. Even in 2017, the most he ever did was four straight games.
Man, 22.
Yeah, sorry, 22, yeah. So I look at the team and I go, Jalen's playing well. The defense is playing well. Obviously, they have a ton of talented players on offense, and they're improving week after week. So I don't see any reason not to be in on them.
Well, I think there's a difference between acknowledging their improvement and given the... Because we really have the almost the story of two halves of the first half of the season, right? There was pre-bye and post-bye. And I think it's fair to say that they are improving. I think it's fair to say that you see the light at the end of the tunnel. But... It's just not that long ago before we were talking about them potentially missing the playoffs.
But I think a difference is, so in 2016, when the team started 3-0, right? And at 3-1, they barely lost to Detroit. Like, we were surprised by that. Like, that team wasn't supposed to be that good.
Right.
I think if you look at the seven games they've played this year, in the four games they've had mostly everybody, they've looked kind of exactly how many people thought, right? Like, I know me and you are more at like 10 wins instead of 12, but they're 4-0 when they have everybody. They're averaging almost 30 points when they have everybody. They've beaten the Packers when they've had everybody. They've beaten the Bengals when they had everybody. So while I get your point that there was definitely a stretch where they didn't look great, and like the Green Bay game, I left feeling almost more discouraged because of how Jalen played. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, now that if you look at the totality of it, they have been more a football team, I think, that we expected to see than they have been the opposite of it.
And you have to at least allow for the first 4 weeks. And it's not that you erase it, but you almost have to look at it through the prism of the first 4 weeks was their first real game action as a team, and they didn't have key players in some of those games. They're still 2-2, but if I was going through my record of predictions, they're only one game off of what I predicted. You know, I thought they would beat the Falcons at home, and I didn't know what would happen with the first game of the season. So they beat Green Bay unexpectedly. I thought they should beat the Falcons. They lose that game, and now you beat Cincinnati, whereas when I went through my preseason predictions, right, I had that as a loss on my list. So they're really at 5-2, and I think most people would have been happy with them being at 5-2, and really they're a drop away from being 6-1.
Well, and here's the other reason why they've made believers out of me, is if you look at where this team was at, think about it. They were in New Orleans, down with like a minute to go, staring 1-2 in the face, with likely 1-3 in the face next week against Tampa, and they get that Goddard play. Like, my biggest concern with this team was that if it was going to fall apart, they would be unable to stop it. That if the ball started rolling down the hill, that last year would, like, that would be there, that they wouldn't have the resiliency to do it. To me, this team bouncing back from like that 2-2 start, nearly being 1-3, getting smoked against Tampa, like the whole city trying to get Nick out of here against the Browns, to bounce back from that, I didn't think they had that in them. Like, my concern was never talent. My concern was this thing was broken, and once it's broken, you can't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm impressed at how it looks like they fixed it.
I generally agree with that. I was not confident in them turning it around.
Mm-hmm.
However,
and to be honest, I wasn't either. So the fact that they did it, you know, I have to give them credit.
I do. And I thought the Giants win. On some level, I was more impressed with the Giants win than the Bengals win, only because of the context of the...
Yeah,
not
was,
impressed, but
right.
I thought that that game was the honestly, the crossroads of the season.
It was coming off the Browns
season.
Game. It was coming off
and
of that.
The Nick stuff.
Think of how many moments they've had like that where they've avoided disaster.
I know. I just... That feeling that you have shaken of... feeling like they could fall apart, I just think that it takes more for me, for a team that I felt that way about, that it takes more for me to not feel like that feeling could come back. You know, that if things get rocky again, I'm not going to be confident. I will once again be waiting for that bad thing
to
happen.
So see, maybe that's where we differ, because if they lose to the Jags, I'm not like pressing the panic button. This team has gotten me to a point where I'm going to need to see 2 or 3 weeks of poor play before I don't believe anymore, because I think they have played for the most part now in the totality of it. And look, when we were in it, certainly I felt that they weren't playing well in the turnovers. But the totality of this season has been more impressive to me than it has been discouraging. And because of that, I'm giving them leeway, right? Like, if that Bengals win bought them leeway for me.
Yeah.
The 3 straight wins bought them leeway for me. I think they'll beat the Jaguars. But if they don't, I'm not going to be like, well, yeah, I knew Nick was a fraud. I told you guys Jalen wasn't that good. They've been good enough for a long enough stretch for me where I'm back to believing that they are the team that we saw in like 2022 and like the beginning of 2023.
Yeah, they're beating the Jags. Let me read this for you.
Yeah.
And this is another reason why you should believe, especially when thinking about how they will handle adversity, what they did. They didn't do well last year versus adversity they've already gone through this year, and they've handled it well. They banded together. They didn't splinter apart. So here's Jalen. A fool isn't a fool for making a mistake. A fool is a fool for refusing to learn. And I'm going to learn from the things that went wrong last year. Now, it's one thing to say it or what have you. It's one thing to put it in practice. And that's what he's done. He's had the chance. If last year was still lingering, if he didn't like Nick and all this other stuff was going on, there was a moment in the first month of the season where it could have very easily went the wrong way like it did last year.
Multiple times.
That's not what happened. They convened, they hashed out whatever it is they needed to hash out, talked about things they needed to talk about, got on the same page, and he has even come out and been in glowing support of his head coach. Like, so to me, that says a lot. I know sometimes guys just say things, and I get that. But for this kid, who's been stubborn to a fault at times, where he wouldn't change certain things, he clearly has learned from at least the role he played in last year. Not saying it was all his fault, but things that he may feel like I could have done better to help us pull out of that 6-game slump at the end of the season. He's choosing to do things differently this year, and that has a ripple effect when things don't go well. He's, instead of him pulling away and saying, let me process stuff and this is how I do it on my own, he's in the fight, in the fire with those guys.
And with Nick.
And with Nick. Because quite frankly, it's Nick and the team, and then there was Jalen over there.
Yeah.
So I've said this before. You line up both guys, and you talk about who's all lining up with whom and this and that and the other. Nick has more people lining up in his corner because he's more relatable. That the players, he's more approachable, right? That he wears his emotions on his sleeves. He's like one of them. That's where Jalen needed to get to. I'm in the fight with you guys, and that's where it feels like he's at.
I don't disagree with
And I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything you said. Yeah. I thought that the Bengals win was a great performance. I said yesterday about Jalen that the finally it gets into his head, I need to figure out or at least try to do these things that I haven't been able to do before. Even if I'm uncomfortable, I think it's a big thing. Also, I agree with you, even if he doesn't feel that way about Nick, saying that you feel that way is an important thing to keep the team together, all those things. I'm just not there. And I think the other reason is, and this, I know people will say you're crazy and that's not fair, the Green Bay game almost feels like the preseason game to me. In my head, it just seems so long ago, such a weird game. Green Bay wasn't what Green Bay is. We were different. Like, it was in Brazil. I almost can't even count.
But I don't get
Green
why
Bay.
That impacts.
Well, why isn't Green Bay what they are?
I'm just curious. They're a better team now than they were.
But I mean, they're still a good team, though.
Sure, yeah.
But you think they're better than the Eagles, is what you're saying?
I don't know.
Because I think the Eagles are better than the Packers.
I have no idea. All I know is that game, if we're saying what are their accomplishments this year, I'm not saying they beat the Packers. It's just a separate thing to me. Even though it's not that I don't want to give them credit for it. I know it sounds that way,
but even
it's not
if you
that
don't signal out the Packers win, because I didn't think it was a super impressive performance. It was an impressive win.
Yeah, we were waiting to get the first game of the season.
Yeah, in Brazil.
We were conflicted about that game, I think, a lot of us were.
But I think you have to include it when you talk about the fact that this team at full strength is undefeated. So we can feel however we want.
It does matter.
But
that,
like, you say full strength. It's not. Nobody's at full strength.
No, but all right, fine. You want to say the Atlanta game? Fine. But I'm saying the Tampa game, you can't hold against them. They're missing AJ Davante and Lane. Now,
them.
They should have played better than they did, and right. It was disappointing the way they no-showed.
Yeah.
But fine, you want to say 4-1 or whatever. Like, the Atlanta game, you're right. That should count. You're only missing AJ. You should still win that game.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, this is a team that, like, the record speaks for itself. When however you want to feel about the Packers game, you have to include it as a win in a totality.
Sure, yeah, well, it's part of the record.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree. And also,
and everybody else's win week one counts.
Yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't count. I'm saying when I'm thinking about the team,
mm-hmm.
it almost feels like a different portion of the schedule to me. I don't want to belabor it. It doesn't.
Well, yeah.
I think maybe one. So you weren't here in 2022, right? I'm trying to remember the year. Okay. So for me, maybe one of the reasons me and Ike are a little more in and you don't quite feel it yet is just because I think that felt like 2022. Like being
the
part
game
of it.
Did.
Yeah,
the
that's
game
what I'm
did.
Saying,
yes.
right? Like, but just like the way the fans reacted to everything, the way the locker room was, the way Jalen. Like, so it's been a long time since it felt like that.
Yes. That game felt like 2022, but the Browns game felt like 2023.
It did, but.
And it was 2 weeks prior.
But.
That's
all I'm saying. And that Browns is not a bad loss, man. I mean, not a bad win.
No, I know. But again.
That's a decent team.
You're talking about how it felt.
No, sure. I know.
You know, that's how that game felt to me.
But a lot of that was, if we're being honest, like part of it was how they played for sure, but also a lot of it was what Nick did.
Yes.
Like Nick overshadowed what I think. If Nick doesn't do what he does,
right.
I think we'd be able to look at it a little more and go, you know what? Jalen didn't turn it over. The defense was pretty good.
Sure.
And so that's part of it.
215-592-9494. Do you believe in the Eagles as Super Bowl contender? Steven Eagleville, you're on WIP. Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Steve?
What up, Steve?
Good. Hey, this is my first time calling, so bear with me a minute here. I'm on the same side as Spike. I'm not ready to jump all in on this yet. I just think we need a little bit more consistency from everybody. I'm not saying it's not a good win and that it wasn't positive for the team as a whole, but at the same time, like, if you really look at it, most of the points were scored by, you know, the quarterback and his legs, not by the team as a whole. And the one throw to Devontae.
What does that even mean? What does that mean? Hold on. What does that even mean, Steve?
What do you mean? What do I mean?
What does that mean that the most of the points that were scored by the quarterback and his legs?
Well, with the tush push and all.
Yeah, oh, so you're real. Telling me? Hold on. So you're telling me you don't believe had they just turned around and gave the ball to Saquon three times, he wouldn't have scored those touchdowns?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that's not a sustainable model.
It is sustainable. It's been sustainable since they've been doing it. What do you mean it's not sustainable? It is sustainable.
Well, everybody was saying a couple weeks ago, you can't give the...
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. I'm really quick. I'm just curious. Like, how did you feel about the offense in 2022?
I felt good about it, but I felt like some of what they did wasn't exactly clean football.
We set these unrealistic.
Well, no, the reason I'm asking those because Jalen is on track for 20 touchdowns this year passing, and he had 23 that year. So, like, it's not going to be that different in terms of how they made the Super Bowl in 2022. I get your point that do I think Jalen can throw for 40 touchdowns in this league? No, I think Jalen. I'd be surprised if he ever did that. And so you're right when you look at the other contending teams, like it looks different. But we've seen them almost win the Super Bowl with this exact model of offense.
Game manager, we're going to push. We're going to pound it all the way to New Orleans, Steve. Pound town.
Him and Hugh driving all the way there.
New Orleans, Steve.
Yep, pound town with Ike and Hugh.
Yep, in the car and Tucker videotaping.
I was just going to say, he's trying to get on that road trip with Hugh. That's what he's
I am the road trip, Steve. What do you mean?
Yeah,
I'm the road trip.
Thank you for the call, Steve.
Oh, yes. My apologies.
Yes. You think Hugh wants to roll by himself?
No, come on. And he doesn't want to roll with any of us. So
exactly.
Thank you for the call, Steve. The tush push... the touchdowns count. Now, I don't like when they count them as Jalen total
rushing
touchdowns.
Yes.
If we're talking about that, that's a different... But a touchdown's a touchdown.
I agree with you, but also bottom line, they're like one of the most effective teams in the league at converting fourth and third and like short. So
that's fine.
Saying, but that is a winning formula to be able to, when it's third and second, like to consistently get first downs. I mean... That's a winning formula.
I'm not betting on any more anytime Saquon touchdowns. All Jalen.
Yeah.
Well, you see Jalen handed him the ball to spike it.
Yeah. I would have
thrown it right back at him.
I would have threw it right back at him.
Yeah, would have hit him in the helmet with it. The only time I don't like the tush push is when they're in the middle of the field. It's third down. Yeah, it's early in the game. It's just, it feels like a waste of a
I agree. It's not, it feels lazy, but it is what it is.
All right. Two things. Man, we got a lot to get to. First of all, this is a quote from Elliot. These are things we're going to get to next. First, I don't get the obsession with the Eagles needing an identity on offense. They just need to take care of the ball and score.
Nice.
It doesn't matter if they're a running team, a passing team, an AJ team, or a Saquon team. All right, that's the first thing we'll debate.
I'm happy you brought that up.
Okay. Two other things. We have a quote from Howard from last night about his behavior at the Eagles-Bengals game.
Sickening stuff.
Howard's behavior?
Yes. From a quote from Howard.
About me?
No. Okay. About him. Right. You are safe, Elliot.
Okay. Well, normally when someone says Howard said something on air to me, it means my training
really
camp stats.
You are a fellow Big J.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a Big
that
J.
That is true.
Yeah. That's egregious true. Stuff from an Eagles Insider of the Year candidate.
Well, I hope it's, you know, taken into account on Wednesday.
And the other thing
not that I care.
And this is on you, Elliot.
Okay.
Is that we have a Juan Soto rumor that may lead back to the Phillies.
Hardest wood I had ever touched.
And we have all determined that we are sacrificing for Soto.
Okay.
So Jack will name his second child Juan. I committed to a Juan Soto tattoo. Ike is going to eat a sandwich with mayonnaise on it.
Very soft.
And we're going to...
Mayonnaise is great.
Yeah. Well,
of course it mayonnaise is. May be the worst thing
I actually
ever.
Do vegan mayo. It's very good.
Vegan mayo is pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Vegan mayo?
Yeah, it tastes just like regular mayo, to be honest.
Yes.
Know what it tastes like.
They don't use eggs.
Well, you will when Juan Soto's here.
Yeah. So we're going to need to see if you'll participate.
Yeah.
So all that is next. We have a lot to get to. That is all coming up next on the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.